Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. I'm going to be talking about the Ukraine. I think Canadians are fairly focused on this matter because every major news outlet provides a headline on the hour and a half hour saying there might be a war and Russia might invade. So we think we have the ideal guest to talk about it. He is Glenn Michalczuk of the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I should say that you have a statement that is, I saw published in the Peace Alliance Winnipeg.ca. I urge people to go to that site, read what the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians has to say. But I'll ask you, Mike. I keep wanting to call you Michael. I'm really sorry. Glenn, I want to ask you, first of all, what's the thrust of your statement? And then if you could give us your impressions of what it might be happening there. We get all kinds of sort of alarmist headlines. But what is the association saying?
Okay. The Association of United Ukrainian Canadians issued a statement that took issue with Canada's escalation of the crisis. And the thrust of our statement is for de-escalation of the crisis and that Canada should be working for de-escalation of the crisis. So we're very concerned about what has been happening in terms of various announcements by the Canadian government, statements by its ministers, that show that Canada is really trying to inflame the tensions in Ukraine. So our statement is very simple, but says that Canada should work for a diplomatic solution and that this would be in the interest not only of Canadians, because of course, if there was a war in Europe, it would involve Canada, but it would be in the interests of Ukraine and Europe to seek a diplomatic solution. So rather than calling for increasing military presence, increasing military preparedness, we want Canada to de-escalate the situation. And one of the things we flagged in our statement was the comments made by Minister Joly on her trip last week or the week before to Ukraine and Europe, where she reinforced Canada's interest to see Ukraine part of NATO. That we know that these kind of statements are the statements that are inflaming the situation there, because we of course know that Russia has expressed extreme concern as to its security concerns and the expansion of NATO. So statements such as those made by Minister Joly, are only inflaming the situation, and Canada shouldn't be making those statements. Mm-hmm. So. And in terms of the tensions, yes. Well, really, you know, there's a lot of misinformation, I think, in the Canadian and Western media about the situation. I mean, what you see every time you turn on the news is that Russia is preparing for invasion, mm-hmm. and there's no indication that is really the case. So the types of information that Canadians are getting in the corporate media, the big corporate media, is very disturbing, very harmful in terms of Canadians being able to make a decision and our members of parliament being able to make some kind of sane and rational decision. And just prior to coming on, I was looking at some of the news out of Atlantic Canada on one of the websites, and apparently two members of parliament have called for an emergency debate when parliament resumes on Monday. They've called for the government to set up emergency debate. It's often called a take note debate. So there's been a letter sent to the prime minister. I take it it's from two Liberal MPs. So I would urge your listeners to get on the phones to their members of parliament or fax them or write them or email them saying, that they don't want Canada to be encouraging this kind of tension that's going on, because there's every indication that Canada intends to do that.
By the way, what is this? Is the thrust of those two members that are urging? Are they critical of the? Can you make out what their position is?
No, I can't. Other than it just seems that they are concerned about the, you know, everything that they see and have been reading about this crisis. I mean, it to me is a parallel to the 2003 lead up to the Iraq War in terms of the severity of the kind of language that's being used, the kind of coverage in the media. So I would just suspect that they it's hard to tell from the report, but they just say that the situation is very urgent, very tense, and they want to debate on it. I mean, the take note debates don't bind the government to do anything. So it may be a way to kind of rubber stamp what the Liberal government is doing. I hope not. I hope that, you know, some parties stand up to it and express their concerns.
Yeah. You know, of course, you are speaking from the point of view of the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians. By the way, the statement is, again, I'll tell people, peacealliancewinnipeg.ca. You must be struck by the peculiar position we're getting into, where the government that we are supporting, the President Zelensky's government, says, please stop escalating the rhetoric, just exactly the way you have said it, and let us be realistic. He said they do not expect that they're going to be attacked. But here you have Jolie, our minister, and the government basically beating war drums. It's what happened to their enthusiasm for the sovereignty of Ukraine. They don't seem to respect the country they claim they're trying to help.
Quite right. I agree with you. And Zelensky's comments have been very interesting. What it suggests to me is that there is another motive or intent here, and this can be linked to perhaps NATO designs in Europe, U.S. designs in Europe, to actually provoke a confrontation with Russia as a way of either redrawing the boundaries of Ukraine and allowing at least NATO to be in the western part of Ukraine, or some other motive that NATO and others may have. Because the way this crisis emerged is that it was NATO and various Western governments which started ramping up this crisis, this talk of a crisis in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And that's how it began. So one would have to think that there's a motive here to escalate this crisis in the hopes that it will create some confrontation. There is some concerns that there are sections of the Ukraine government who want to scuttle the Minsk Accords, and therefore to have some conflict with the eastern region of Ukraine that drew in Russia would make that a fait accompli, and that Ukraine would be more or less partitioned along the lines it is now.
Yeah. It's a very, as your statement and many others pointed out, they seem to operate like this is all just, you know, rhetoric, but we all know that mistakes can be made. And also, some of the dynamics within Ukraine are not talked about. I mean, I found it strange that we could be making all these definite statements about what should happen when the previous president, Poroshenko, was arrested by the Zelensky government with treason. And what that tells you, at least I think, is that's a very unstable group of people running Ukraine. And so they'd be talking about arming them or making commitments when they themselves are wrestling under a table. I mean, you've got the previous president and the current president using really extreme language about one another.
Yes, very much so. I mean, and this this division within Ukraine, of course, goes back definitely to 2014 and the so-called Maidan Revolution, which was really a coup that was organized by NATO and the United States to depose of that government and install a government more friendly to Western interests. Mm-hmm. So there is this history of destabilization in Ukraine and various political divisions based on parties and leaders of those parties that have alignments either with Europe or with Russia. Those stretch back even before 2014 to, of course, one of the first color revolutions that we saw within Ukraine. So yes, and some of this builds on historical tensions and divisions within Ukraine. Ukraine is very much a country of diverse regions, diverse history, different languages spoke, Russian in the eastern parts, Ukrainian in the western parts.
Yes.
So there's also the whole history of Crimea, which has been first part of Russia, then part of Ukraine, and then has now again rejoined Russia. So there is these various divisions, and it is preventing any kind of stability in Ukraine. All this foreign interference into Ukraine, and there is a movement in Ukraine of peace activists and others who want to seek solutions, but I think they're largely prevented from that.
Yeah, Glenn, and we're speaking to Glenn Michalczuk. Isn't it true that Zelensky actually ran as a peace candidate against the war leader, Poroshenko, and got a tremendous vote?
And yes, he did.
And his message was he was going to end the war, end the problems, end the fighting with Donetsk.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes. Yes, he did. And his victory showed to me that the people of Ukraine were tired of war. They were tired of this internal conflict, which had no real bearing on the average Ukrainian citizen in the West part of Ukraine. And they were tired of it. I mean, of course, a lot of lives have been lost of the soldiers killed, of the regular Ukrainian army killed in the conflict there. There's been a lot of lives lost on the eastern side of that conflict too. So yeah, the people of Ukraine were tired of war and still are tired of war, which is another reason I think that it's really very imperialist on the part of Canada to say, take this population, this people who have been racked by 10 years of civil war and is now trying to provoke another war for their own interests. And and part of this fanaticism that's being driven in Canada is being driven by the right-wing Ukrainian organization, the Ukrainian Canadian Congress.
Yes.
It has its pipeline into the government, which is Chrystia Freeland.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, I mean, we really have to, I wish Canadians would talk about that. She's not a small player. She's had throughout her career, she has, her prime interest has been back and forth to Ukraine and helping them shape an anti-Russian policy, which, I mean, at the core of it, it is always antagonistic to Russia, which fair is fair, but to not talk about it and say, is that our policy? Is that her policy? We're speaking to Glenn Michalczuk, and I want to get, I know that you and Glenn is with the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, and the statement of the association is in peacealliancewinnipeg.ca. I think people should read the journal and that statement. Well, you participated in a webinar where you got to hear the thoughts of Ms. Freeland and also of, Minister Jolie. What was that like?
Yes, this was organized by a Winnipeg member of parliament, Liberal Winnipeg member of parliament, Jim Carr. And it featured Foreign Minister Jolie, Deputy Prime Minister Freeland. The title of it was Canada's Role in Protecting Ukraine. And it was announced as a webinar to solicit, you know, and to hear the views of Ukrainian Canadians on what Canada should do to protect Ukraine. Because of course there is a large Ukrainian Canadian population in Canada, which seems to be used by the Ukrainian Canadian Congress and Chrystia Freeland to rubber stamp this, whatever kind of objectives they have with Ukraine. So yes, this webinar, and it was attended, it was also attended in a significant number of the panelists were members of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. So very structured event, even though there was a lot of people who signed on and came on to listen, very structured event with the only people really allowed to speak were Freeland and Minister Joly, which one would expect. But then this whole several members of the, you know, the regional and national leadership of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. So what did we hear? Well, we heard both from Minister Joly did give a short description of her recent trip to Europe. She talked very briefly about the divide in NATO and very briefly about the various diplomatic efforts being made to resolve the crisis. But both her and Chrystia Freeland really emphasized the notion of confrontation, hard power. Democracy can't back down in the face of authoritarianism. Yes. And in fact, I think the term that Chrystia Freeland used was that Ukraine was the battleground between democracy and authoritarianism. And I actually have seen similar quotes to that effect in some of the news statements that Freeland makes about Ukraine. So it was a very disappointing event, because it really was just a promotion that Canada needs to be very aggressive on the question of Ukraine. And it was a very disappointing event. I don't think any of the number of questions that were asked or opinions given by, I know at least one recent Ukrainian immigrant who joined to Canada. She is from Crimea. She asked some questions in the chat and others, but Voice of Women were on the call, and they asked some questions, but I asked some, and the only questions that were dealt with were these kind of user-friendly questions from that played right into the narrative.
Yes. You know, I just have to say, because as we were talking at the beginning, Zelensky has said, please tone this down. We don't think the Russians are going to attack. And also, there was a very provocative step taken, and it was initiated by the Americans, of course. The U.S. began to pull very dramatically the families of their diplomatic personnel. They told them to leave Kyiv. And so Canada now has done the same. And since Freeland says it's democracy versus authoritarianism, well, the democratic government of Ukraine that you were supporting asked you not to do that, but you did it. So is she the repository of democracy, and Zelensky, what is he?
Exactly. And it just shows how the people of Ukraine are being used by Canada and others to forward their interests and whatever real objectives they have in promoting this crisis and whatever they hope to get out of it, that the people of Ukraine are being used in it. So, I mean, I find it interesting that, you know, Minister Joly went to Europe. Now the defense minister is going there. And they don't have any meetings with the Russian foreign ministry. They don't have any meetings with them.
Very telling. This is we're speaking to Glenn Michalczuk, and you know, I think this is something I've spoken of on our program, the Taylor Report. The Maidan phenomena, as you described it, was a coup. And we know it was a coup because there was a signed agreement of all the parties, with foreign observers also signing, that there was going to be an early election as a result of the displeasure with the sitting president. So the sitting president said, okay, I stand down, and then we'll have an election. They didn't have an election. Instead, this woman from the United States, I forget her position, roamed the streets of Kiev. And she said into a phone, and we all heard her, F the European Union, we're going to go with these guys. And she even named the people. So that happened, which means that it was broken, destabilized. And you had an element, those of southeastern Ukraine in the Donbass, and they said, well, you know, you broke the agreement, and so therefore we have to take a stand against you. And the Canadian government doesn't acknowledge any of the above, and they're prepared to call a government that alienated the Donbass a democratic government. But isn't the issue that of having seized power and not sharing and not living up to the agreement that they had signed?
Yes, it is. And it's continued on so that even afterwards, we have the Minsk agreements, which have called for a pullback of forces from the border between the Donbass and Ukraine, where it's called for various measures to bring about political stability. And none of that's happened. So,
and they also some autonomy, recognized autonomy, as we would say for Quebec, or in Belgium for the Flemish, some recognition that was agreed to, and was subject to some negotiation. But they won't talk to the people. Am I right? They don't talk to the representatives of Donbass.
That's right. I mean, any of those channels that were possibly open through the, because during the Minsk Accords, there were representatives of the Donbass and the government of Ukraine and Russia. And I think Germany was present too. So all those parties were talking, and all of that has broken down now and continues to be non-functional. And that to me is, when you listen to the Canadian government, all of this is swept under the rug. None of the real substance of the matter is being discussed. And instead, it's just the hysteria that's being discussed, and the need to send, now there's pressure on the Canadian government to send arms to Ukraine, in addition to the boots on the ground that it has there. This pressure is coming largely from the Conservative Party, but also the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress. I suspect it's something that Chrystia Freeland would be entirely in support of. So I would suspect that many good Liberal members of Parliament are going to, you know, have to toe the line unless they do otherwise and send, military assistance in the form of arms to Ukraine. And that is not going to solve any problems.
They're really showing how foolish and dangerous it would be for Ukraine to get involved with NATO, because NATO seems to think they own you and you're going to do what they tell you. I mean, and they haven't even made them a member yet, but this policy, for example, you would think, and many European states actually are aware of this, you would think they'd say, well, look, Kiev, you're going to have to talk to the people of Donbass. But NATO doesn't talk, they're not even interested. They seem to be thinking like soldiers. How much territory can we capture? Are you struck by the fact that Croatia says they will quit NATO if they go to war with Russia? Germany says they don't like, they're not going to send any weapons. And Hungary says they don't want anything to do with this. NATO seems to be putting a gun to its own head.
Yeah, I don't think things are going well for NATO. And in fact, a couple of days ago, I saw just a news clip with Antony Blinken, the U.S., the U.S. Foreign Secretary. And he looked very disturbed when he had to say that NATO is perfectly united. And it was just, you can sometimes read in these politicians' faces that there's more to the story than what they're saying. And then, of course, afterwards, some of this information did come out about the countries that are not NATO countries, that are not getting on board with the, with the war that NATO wants to create. So it looks like NATO is trying to give a war, but certain people don't want to come.
They seem to be the peace front. Then Canada should join them. Speaking of Canada, and by the way, we're talking to Glenn Michalczuk, and Glenn, I think many Canadians should be interested in a proposal from the Russian ambassador. It was quite a long article, actually, a rather unusual one in the Globe and Mail, where they interviewed him. And he said, well, you have a prime minister. We think it would be very good if he wants to help solve the problem that he speak directly to President Putin. And he pointed out, he says, Putin speaks to the prime minister of Britain. He speaks to the chancellor of Germany. He speaks to the president of France. Why can't the Canadian prime minister call him up and ask him or talk about what his interests and concerns are?
Yes, I saw that article. And I mean, that is the real point, right? I mean,
it seems to me we have a president. I know where Biden stands, but the prime minister seems to be afraid of that kind of thing. That isn't even thought about.
No. And I think that's really the problem of Canadian foreign policy and Canadian diplomacy on this question. Is for exactly that reason. When you look at what Canada's doing, it's hard to think of it as Canadian policy in the interests of Canada. Mm-hmm. It seems to be Canadian policy in the interests of NATO and in the interests of the United States and Britain. It seems to be that the three cheerleaders for this action are the UK, Canada, and the United States. Yes. And we're beginning to see this kind of breakdown in international relations, where it's more and more becoming this core group of nations, Canada, the UK, United States, Australia, who are making these kind of declarations, declarations, whether it be against Russia or it be against China. And that's really, something that Canadians should really be concerned about and should take control of their foreign policy and how Canada acts in the world. And as long as we're part of NATO, Canada will not have the opportunity to have an independent foreign policy. It will not. NATO makes enormous decisions that never come to the Canadian Parliament for ratification. Decisions about policy, about strategy. The whole Canadian deployment of forces into Eastern Europe was done simply through NATO. There was never any kind of a consultation with Parliament and a decision. It was the Canadian Armed Forces making the deployment through NATO. What Canada does internationally has been taken out of our hands.
Yeah. No, on my previous program, we were talking to Stephen Gowans about this subject, and I mentioned it was, Canada fought against Nazism, fascism, and the idea of the United Nations. As the war ended, they formed United Nations. They didn't form NATO. NATO is a gang. And I have to ask you about that. The defense minister of Ukraine visited about a month ago, and he gave an interview to the Globe, which no one remarked on. And the defense minister said, we cannot count on Germany, We cannot count on France because both of them are too practical and they want to be friendly with Russia. He said, we need Canada. We need the Anglo-Saxon countries to come in. Mm. Anglo-Saxon. And the Globe and Mail didn't write an editorial. Nobody wrote an opinion piece saying, is that man, is he crazy or are we crazy? Anglo-Saxon? Right.
Well, and that's how exactly how it's played out. You know, that's exactly how this crisis has played out. It's been these countries driving the crisis, which says that there probably is an alignment with forces, political forces within Ukraine that may be looking to do something. And so that is why this is extremely
These people
dangerous.
Called the Five Eyes, the Five Eye yeah. group.
Yeah. And that's why it's an extremely dangerous situation, because there are various forces at work here that are trying to organize a confrontation.
Mm-hmm. Some other things have come up about Ukraine. I wonder if you can comment on it. Of all people, the Russian ambassador, I know we're not supposed to quote the Russians because everybody's agreed that's the devil, but in the interview, the Russian ambassador said something interesting. I don't think most Canadians knew, certainly has not been widely mentioned. He said, we're not going to invade Ukraine. And we don't understand why you would be sending them arms or anybody, because they are themselves an arms exporting country.
Yes.
They export very sophisticated weaponry. He said, if you're going to, if you think there's going to be a war, you don't export your weapons. You hang on to them.
Yes.
What about that? Well,
I think that this just plays into the narrative that Canada and others are trying to create about this crisis, and that Ukraine somehow has got its back against the wall. So I think it's part of the kind of crisis atmosphere that we saw leading up to the Iraq war, where Colin Powell went to the United Nations and lied about weapons of mass destruction being in Iraq. Hmm. So it just fuels this crisis atmosphere. And it prevents people from having a rational discussion about, is there a problem there? Mm-hmm. I mean, you may have seen that there was this #StandWithUkraine movement mm-hmm. that really sucked in a lot of Canadian politicians. And the #StandWithUkraine is really shorthand for let's go to war with Russia. But in this debate that may be coming up in Parliament, I think in one of the news articles I was reading, it was questionable what stand the NDP might take. So all the members of Parliament are being pressured to line up behind this this phony situation that exists, that somehow Ukraine is threatened, yeah. and so we have to take a stand. It's unfortunate, but that's what's been happening.
Well, you made a good point at the beginning that we should be, it's probably be a good thing we get an urgent debate. And shouldn't we be saying to those members of Parliament and to one another, there's an easy basis here for a discussion. There's the Minsk agreement that has been signed, but it's not implemented. So why isn't that at the core of what we're talking about for the future of Ukraine? And then there's other countries in NATO are having their problems with this. Why aren't we making that part of our Canadian debate?
Right. But why don't we, as Canadians, look at what's being, why Germany, why France, and other countries don't want to be part of this campaign? And is there anything really so bad about having good relations with another country like Russia? Even though people may say, well, I don't agree with their social system, or Freeland talks a lot about a rules-based international order. That's one thing she talked about on this webinar. But what that really means is that countries of different social and political and economic systems respect one another and have agreements and have trade. And if they have disputes, they settle them through diplomatic means or through the United Nations or some other vehicle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it comes to Russia, it becomes what Freeland said, the battleground between democracy and autocracy. And I mean, the next country that they're going to put into those kind of terms is China.
Indeed. That's part of this ideological approach, which is a violation of the UN Charter, by the way. I mean, you mentioned the point about, you know, mutual respect, regard for international law. She doesn't, when Freeland talks about this, that's a homemade idea. The rules-based order, because who's in charge of that? She doesn't say, but obviously she thinks it's the NATO slash the United States, really the United States. And we really ought to be in a battle to make the return respect for the United Nations. I don't understand why NATO takes up all this space. Canada has a right to talk about whether it even should be in NATO. After all, it was established vis-a-vis the Soviet Union. By the way, Glenn, do you remember the expression peace dividend? Remember when everybody thought that the weapons were going to be beaten in the plowshares, et cetera? And it turned out, no. I mean, they just went, behaved like a tiger. They said, oh, good, the opponent is down. Now we leap on the world.
Right. And yes, that was after the fall of, you know, the breakup of the Soviet Union. There was this talk that there was not a need in Europe for all this kind of confrontation and militarization of Europe. And that really did go out the door. And that really is telling about NATO expansion. I mean, to what end was NATO expansion necessary? I mean, Russia was a country that had basically had to be within its borders. I mean, yes, it has a strong military, no doubt about it. But so does Germany, so does France. But there was no need for NATO expansion into Eastern Europe. And at that point in those years, the European Union was talking really about forming its own defense force, as a European Union, which would make sense in those terms. And obviously that was seen as a threat by NATO. NATO is a power unto itself, and people should be wary of that.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, we're really glad the work you're doing, Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, and of course, Peace Alliance Winnipeg.ca. Please urge people, our listeners, to go to read the statements there and also to follow the events, because we need a clearer analysis. And Glenn Michalczuk, you've really provided us a lot of information. We do appreciate it. And we look forward to talking to you further. Actually, we're going to follow up with you on this matter of the urgent debate or the need for it, at any rate, because that initiative that you're talking about should be taken. People should be getting in touch with their MPs. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM.